For December the 13th, 2019, we talk about Disco Elysium, Watch Dogs 2, and we ask you which games or series you got to late. Also, please tune in to Duckstream next week, December 20th through 22nd, duckfeed.tv/duckstream. Welcome to Level 308. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who like video games. Dennis.
No, video games? Just like video games?
Oh, love video games. Sorry. Downgraded. I've been feeling, you know, I've been thinking about video games. Not all of them are great. Some of them are bad. Let me talk about that.
See, yeah, it's turned into a joke for you.
I was wasting brain cycles thinking about who I should go to first. When obviously it's David, because he wasn't here. Dennis was going to be on, but he's not feeling great. So everybody send just one small part of your not sore throat to Dennis so he can get better. If we all just pitch in a little bit of the throat, we should be good.
Not sure that's how that works.
It grows back like the liver.
I think that's exactly how it works. What's up, David?
Not too much. Got a new job, so that's pretty exciting. Gonna be working for a company called The Farmer's Dog. I'd be lying if I was saying I wasn't perhaps most excited about the fact that, office dogs are a thing.
Office dogs and, rule.
Yeah, so I get to give all the scritches.
Mm-hmm. And not have to pick up any of the poop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Classic dog uncle situation.
Best of all worlds.
Exactly.
That rules. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, dude.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know that I have I don't have any follow-up questions because I don't want to, pump you for information about your employer.
You get the pleasure of staying in New York during the winter.
It's not so bad. One of the advantages of, New York's kind of slowly converting over to full cyberpunk, so going outside is mostly an option.
No, yeah. it's mostly you're fine. Yeah. Well, congratulations. Ben, what's going on with you?
Oh, not a whole lot. I mentioned this before the show. I went to Portland over the weekend to visit a friend from college who just bought a house, so it was exciting. Portland's a really awesome city. It's just like one giant neighborhood, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And like everyone's really the way someone described it is like everyone's really friendly here, but they're not Canadian.
What's wrong with being Canadian?
In Portland, they might be.
If you have a circle or like a pie graph of all friendly people, I feel like Canadians would probably take up the majority of that.
Take up lot of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Some of the nicest Canadians I've met have been in Portland, although they came there for an event that I was attending. So I don't know that they're endemic is the thing.
That'll require further research, I guess.
Yeah. If you're Canadian and in Portland and you're from there, you don't exist unless you're ancestrally Canadian. I don't know.
Isn't Seattle like a suburb of Canada?
It's a fair drive away.
It's a 3-hour drive or train ride away. For some reason, I think, the friendliness kind of spread apart, and they either went north or they went south from Seattle.
Yeah.
Seattle's, I feel like it's similar to New York culture, where it's like, if you meet people one-on-one, they're pretty nice. Mm-hmm. But if you're just, walking down the street, everyone kind of minds their own business,
And,
I was explaining this to my dad over Christmas, is that, a lot of it is people just don't realize the degree to which New York, a huge part of everything in New York is just dedicated to like getting people where they need to go and doing what they need to do. So it's a thing where it's like you literally could not be polite to everyone because there simply wouldn't be enough time.
It's all infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a product of the number of people that are there. It's like the average value of human life goes down for some reason when there's more people.
And it's not really that. Like, if you look at a lot of it, like a lot of the huge faux pas that like, you know, annoy people about out-of-towners, it's like the number one thing is like never stop at a sidewalk. Like, it's all about like do not interrupt the infrastructure.
Yeah. I like my experience the three months I was there, so grain of salt for whatever it's worth. The meanest people that I met in New York, they were in like really tourist dense areas, and they were not from the place. Like, they weren't just like suffering tourists. Like, it was, you know, transplants who were there and like felt entitled to basically whatever whatever space you were occupying. But like, if you got away from the tourist places and you were not like, and everybody involved in the interaction was at rest, like you were not trying to get from point A to point B, then everybody was like perfectly nice, just regular, because nobody was an inconvenience to the other. Like, you get people when they're still, and generally they were kind. I imagine that's the case everywhere, but you know, New York is the one that operates under the stigma, you know?
I think my favorite thing in terms of kind of a parallel or analogous case to that is I love watching, I think all of the dogs in New York are slightly crazy.
How so?
Because, you know, there's the whole, you know, dogs marking their territory and figuring that stuff out and stuff like that. And so it's like every time a dog goes for walkies, it realizes like, oh no,
since I have so much work to do,
300 dogs have invaded my territory.
Yeah. Also, so many humans walking by and they don't get attention for getting pets, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, well. I don't know. And I was going to talk about like Seattle and Portland being, you know, like I was going to say, oh, Portland's good because like a lot of it's transplants, but Seattle's a lot of transplants too.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. That's kinda probably true.
Being drawn in like by big industry, you know?
Yeah.
Previously, like, maybe it's just because of the history of Seattle is like aerospace. Like maybe it's brought in a bunch of that particular kind of crowd and there's something about them.
Yeah, I guess I've lived in like transplant only cities kind of so far in my life outside of Cincinnati. But
I don't know.
So in Seattle, my sole exposure to Seattle is Infamous 2. which the main thing I got from that is
It's sunny in the video game, right? So that must be Seattle in the summer.
Yes, and I think it explicitly is actually Seattle in the summer. But yes, and I think the biggest thing I noticed there is just Seattle is apparently one massive suburb.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I know. Are there any, like, skyscrapers?
Yeah, there are. Downtown.
Okay. All right. For some reason, I guess the game just felt like, that's lame. Why would we need skyscrapers?
Yeah, they needed you to be able to get around by grinding on power lines and stuff.
The one thing I've noticed is it's like remarkably hard to get around the city because there's things like lakes or the Puget Sound in the way.
Yeah.
And so you have to like either take a bridge or take a ferry or like figure out some way to get around an obstacle to get to where you need to go, or giant hills.
It's so. kind of like getting around the University of Cincinnati campus. You might think it's a straight line, but there's a fucking football stadium in the way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like spherical geometry. Yeah.
I'm just imagining you getting like halfway through your commute and just like stepping off a train and yelling, "Water!" You know, just shaking your fist.
In the way. Always on the way. Yeah. And I don't have much going on. It's mostly I've just mostly been on my bullshit.
you're done with assignment play for the year, or
just about? Yeah, okay. my last big assignment play thing. I was up late beating it last night. Beating Jade Empire.
Phrasing.
What's that? Oh, yeah, no, sorry. No, I was up playing that, and really, like, that is the last, like, huge game I have to beat. Like, my next assignment play thing is going to be Blasphemous, and that is a shorter game.
Is what?
Blasphemous?
Oh, Blasphemous. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. 2D pixel art Souls-like. That is pretty good from what I've seen so far.
Souls-like plus impractical hats.
Yep. You get to play as a spire. He wears a big old pointy helmet.
Okay.
It's impractical.
Like, the point is, what, at least 75% as tall as he is?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, no, the things are kind of winding down for holidays and stuff. And I don't know. It's just nice. It's nice when you have I say this like anybody. It's nice when you have a big project behind you, and
yeah,
the majority of the work on recording an episode about a game like Jade Empire, which is short in terms of Western RPGs, but still a 20-hour game, is like, you got to play a 20-hour game over the course of a few days. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have something along those lines when we talk about the grind.
Ooh. Well, why don't we do that? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say.
Segway went off the cliff.
Sorry. Am I remembering correctly? Like, I feel like this was a joke that I maybe didn't get till much later, but then I can't remember if I remembered it right. Is the fighting style that is basically Western boxing called White Demon style?
No, I don't think so. I know, but I may not have gotten that style.
It should be.
You're referring to it in Jade Empire, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would...
Inside and outside of the game.
Yes, it is. Actually, yes, it is.
Oh!
White Demon style.
That's really funny, because there is Western culture in the game. Like, a very notable side quest has you arguing with a chivalric knight voiced by John Cleese. He's coming over trying to basically be a colonialist and educate you on why your ways are bad. So you have to debate him.
Yeah, that's actually maybe my favorite part of the game, just because I really like the dialogue in that. A lot of it's actually fairly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of it that is that is really colonialism is a worthwhile target for ridicule, and that's what that's there for.
I'm watching the White Demon style video on YouTube right now, and it looks like he just has a firm backhand. I didn't know that was what White Demon style is.
Yeah, weird. I don't know. lots of styles. I might not have done the quest that gets you that. But because Ben said the word this grind, we can get out of banter and go on to the regular kind of show where we talk about the things we've been playing, where we ask you all a question, and then talk about things that are exciting to us. And why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. It stands to reason that we would get started with David.
It has to be David, yeah. Yeah,
because you were away the longest. Sure. What you been playing, buddy?
So I've got a couple of things. So I had the tail end of my whatever they call it, Uplay or Ubisoft Plus or...
Yeah, their subscription
or whatever.
No, you don't need to know the exact term. We know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So at the tail end of that left, and so I decided to try out Watch Dogs 2, just because I've never played one of the Watch Dogs games before, and I wanted to see if I could find my house in San Francisco.
Ooh.
So I know, Ben, I know you played Watch Dogs 1. Did you ever play 2?
Nope.
All right. So yeah. So I guess we're at opposite ends, where I never played 1 and have only played 2. But
Do they still have chess puzzles in Watch Dogs 2?
They do not. Or at least not that I've seen yet.
Okay. It was a weird mini game where you walk into a random cafe and somebody shows you a chess puzzle and you have to solve it. made no sense.
That's pretty funny though. it's very much similar to my take actually on New Dawn in that it's not a particularly noteworthy game for the style, for the story rather. But I really like a lot of the characters, and there's just a lot of funny moments. They kind of, this time around, from what I can tell, whereas Watch Dogs 1, I think, kind of tried to be a more serious Tom Clancy-esque thriller. This one much more channels kind of the anonymous and meme culture and that sort of thing. You're vaguely fighting against the man, but mostly by pulling off elaborate computer-based pranks. Anything from there's actually a mission where you have to sneak into Ubisoft's headquarters and steal the trailer for their next game and leak it. there's a thing where you steal a basically kit from a remake of Knight Rider, the in-universe Knight Rider, and remote control it around to do stunts around the city. So it's really much more just like almost set piece after set piece. Yeah. Most of them are pretty good. They managed to reference just about every kind of cyber sort of mishap and questionable corporate scandal I can at least remember. So for example, there's one of the interesting features the game compared to most games is your main character is a black guy. There's a sequence that basically parodies the startup that released the facial recognition that only worked on white people.
I mean, that wasn't a startup. That was Microsoft.
Microsoft?
Yeah, that was okay. That was a complaint about early Kinect was that it didn't work for black people specifically.
Okay. So yeah. Okay. So even worse than what I remembered. But yeah, they parody that you cheat Pharma Bro out of several million dollars by posing as a member of their equivalent of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay.
Just all sorts of things. Overall, it's very silly. It's very funny. The a lot of it's kind of has some dynamics of almost like a buddy film type of thing, where it's just kind of you and your dorky friends running around doing crazy stuff.
Yeah,
it sounds like Saints Row.
That's what I was gonna say. It sounds like it does. Yeah,
it definitely has some of that feel. There's a couple. I'd have to say another thing I really like is one of your teammates is depicted as being autistic, and I'm not super familiar with that. People who are autistic, but from what I can tell, it seems like it's done pretty respectfully, pretty well done, which is cool.
I mean, like the baseline for a good way of handling that, sadly, is they're not treating it like a joke.
Yeah, and I feel like and Grant, I could see this being something that maybe different people see different ways.
Yeah.
I feel like they thread the needle on it in that. The they'll kind of give the character a hard time about his idiosyncrasies, mm-hmm. but it's consistent with the way they give all of the characters a hard, you know, all of the members of their team a hard time. So it seems like they don't go down the line of either like just making him a joke character or like, you know, overtly not treating him the way they treat every other character, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they do it in a way that acknowledges it but does not trip your sensitivities around it as somebody who does not
laugh with, not laugh at.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think it's good. Overall, it does really well. Every so often, there's a couple of things that I feel like are kind of that really didn't come across the way you meant it to. Most notably, one of the missions, in order to get the information you need, you basically bribe a paparazzi by giving him a celebrity sex tape that you hacked.
Ooh.
And it's like,
yeah, no, like, let's invade somebody's privacy.
Yeah, that's not really cool.
Yeah.
So, like, every so often there's some stuff, but, like, overall, I feel like, at least for me, they seem, those sorts of instances seem much more along the lines of, like, that just didn't quite work out.
What are you doing on most of the missions? Like, is it a lot of driving? Are you doing, like, stealth break-in kind of stuff?
So it varies a good deal. One of the new things I don't think was in the first one is you have a quadcopter and a little RC drone that you use a lot for. It's almost like the, you know, the Ubisoft standard, like climb the radio towers type things, except it tends to be much more like, oh, figure out a way to like work your way through the vents or things like that as a, RC car.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good deal of that. There's a lot of the, I guess you could say, quote unquote, combat. You can rely very heavily on, you know, setting up booby traps and shenanigans, things like that. You can basically SWAT your enemies. You can, if you want to, take control of cars. So either, you know, to have a parked car suddenly run someone over as they walk by, or just to, you know, cause pandemonium, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play it as a shooter, but I would say that's probably not the optimal way. Kind of the optimal is just to cause chaos. And usually by the time you've exhausted all of that, there's like one or two guys left.
No, like the optimal way is to go through the game as a cell phone wizard, like in the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there is our driving sequences, which seem fairly good. I don't know, in the previous game, was the way it worked when you can now do what's called, like, a car takedown or whatever, where basically as you're driving, if a car is chasing you and it passes over something that can be used as a trap, which is usually either a intersection or a underground gas pipe, you get like a quick time prompt that you can do to set it off. Was that how it worked in the first game?
Yep.
Okay, so that's still the same, and that's still what most of the driving revolves around. That's an area where there's definitely some Cole's favorite term, was it neoludative, narrative, dissonance?
It's nowhere near my favorite term. However, ludonarrative dissonance.
Right. So in that, like, you know, your character is basically supposed to be a good guy, but anytime there's a road chase, you're killing a ton of cops. Because, you know, blatantly, just about the only way to break off a road chase is to like set off a gas line under the cop's car.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, again, it's one of those things that's like, I feel like that's one of those things that didn't actually happen in the game's canon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like your character's like it's less about Project Mayhem and more about doing pranks. You're not going after like the state. You're going after the like the cyberpunk. You know, right, the nascent cyberpunk order that is like selling the technology to the police.
Exactly.
For Panopticon surveillance. Yeah.
Exactly. So overall, I'm actually really enjoying it. One thing that is kind of a disappointment is the depiction of San Francisco is kind of meh. I think the big thing is just they depict, the game takes place in almost the entirety of the Bay Area. The problem with that is that most people don't realize the Bay Area is huge.
Yeah.
So they basically compress something like, three cities down into the space of one city, in effect. And so the end result of that is it, at least for me, and granted, this is obviously someone that lived there for a reasonable amount of time, it comes across very Disney World-y,
yeah,
where it's, kind of all that exists are just the landmarks almost, which is fine. I mean, there's a lot of good landmarks, so that's good, but it's just a little odd. In particular, the distance between San Francisco and
San Jose or
San Jose in this is like I don't know, looks like a mile where in reality it's like an hour, 2 hour drive.
Yeah, like there are buses that, run 24/7 that route. Yeah.
So I mean, so that's honestly, that's basically all I have for that. It's just kind of, at least for me, kind of a potato chip game. Just kind of, fun and not so filling.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I just from the distance, like, and also just hearing people's reactions to it, it sounded like they addressed a lot of what one of my main problems with Watch Dogs 1 was, which is it was really dour, kind of gray, just adding any kind of color or personality to it. It seemed like it went a long way for a lot of the people who played it. Sounds like it went pretty far for you. That you played the first one and have like a point of comparison, but like you're talking about the Saints Row-ness of it.
Sadly, as we found out, the only people who played this game are the people who didn't play Watch Dogs 1.
I mean, like Ubisoft announced another one, Watch Dogs Legions at E3.
They DJ Khaled it.
What?
Another one.
Oh no, I didn't. I am too square to understand that reference.
All right.
Yeah, I'll just be over here turning into a skeleton. Well, that's cool though. I picked that up on a sale with the intention that maybe we would do it for a Watch Out for Fireballs. But like that alongside like Mafia 3, it seems like recent entries in recent entries in open world games that got way more interesting when they decided to feature black people.
So it's really kind of funny the degree to which that makes the game much more interesting just from it like not being the exact same thing.
Just for people who are unaware, like Mafia 3, I think you're still dealing with like some Cosa Nostra kind of stuff, but like you're playing in the civil rights era South, like it's in like the 50s or 60s or something like that, and like you're killing a lot of racists.
Well, isn't Mafia 3, isn't it even something like you're a black person that was like adopted by a Cosa Nostra family or something, so it's like even more kind of
I can't say for sure
situation. I'm not sure. I said, I haven't played it, but
we need to find someone who's played Mafia 3, and that search will take a while.
Hey, I think I have that on PlayStation Plus.
It got really good reviews. People dig it. What else have you been playing, David?
Sure. So the other thing I actually picked up on Steam sale is Children of Morta.
Okay.
Have you heard of this sale?
I've seen it recommended to me.
Yeah, so it's a action RPG, pixel graphics action RPG with some kind of roguelike elements. So the actual gameplay, you know, there's no permadeath. It's not roguelike in that situation. You don't really, you know, lose progress, lose equipment, that sort of thing. Well, I guess I should say you don't lose progress, but the interesting thing is your equipment is, lost when you finish each run.
Okay.
And so in that respect, it has the roguelike mechanic of, having to either, very much adapt your play style based on what drops, or, have certain runs where you're just scraping by and other runs where you're just almost unstoppable.
Is it the case that, like, when you die, you drop your gear and you're trying to get back to it, or is it just a complete fresh start?
Complete fresh start.
And does the geometry change between deaths, between runs?
Yeah, so it's, doesn't have a thing where you go, say, like, all the way back this way, like a Spelunky does, where, even if you can skip ahead, you generally won't.
Right.
The game is split into levels and, or I guess regions, you could say, and each region has several levels. So you start at the first level of that region.
Okay.
But then once you beat it, you generally move on to the next one, and there's usually not a reason to go back.
Right.
But there's no, like, carryover when you go to a new region? You're, like, completely fresh there then?
So all of your stats are still there. All of the skill points and attribute updates, but all of your equipment is not.
Okay.
Yeah, like there's a tech tree from what I can see. Like your right. Character has persistent aspects, and I imagine that those are heavily augmented by the gear that you manage to find.
Exactly. And a couple of interesting elements to it is, one, it's probably the most beautiful pixel art I've ever seen. Has a little bit of almost like a watercolor type of look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really good. The other thing is the game's kind of message and theme is very much about the idea of family. And so from that, the various character classes you can play are all the different members of this one family. That's kind of, this family that's been... tasks throughout the generations of, standing up to this evil whenever it arises.
Mm-hmm.
And, they each very much have their own personalities and kind of their own backgrounds. Initially, for example, you can't play as the older brother because he's, basically has already left to kind of... start his own life. And so you don't actually get to play as him until he, eventually realizes things are bad and, like, makes his way back home. Similarly, like, the youngest daughter is initially, kind of too young to fight and hasn't really been trained. And so you can't have her as a character until she's basically progressed enough in her training that she can, actually contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, one of the things that's interesting is both within a run, there's kind of random events. And then also anytime you either die, complete a level, just like save an exit and come back in, you'll come back to the homestead. Mm-hmm. And there'll very often be some sort of, random event that'll be some sort of interaction between the various, family members, which can be, anything from the father. Most of the characters are basically a father, and then his children are most of the playable characters. The character that's not playable but is the smith that makes all your equipment is the uncle, and he's basically divorced. And so, a random event might be there's several where he's writing a letter to his ex-wife, that sort of thing, or just the whole thing I mentioned with the youngest daughter's training. That's all basically the way you unlock her is, there's a sequence of random events that are kind of the stages of her, learning how to fight. And so then once all of those occur, that's when you unlock her. So that both makes, dying much less painful because it tends to, reveal the story. Mm-hmm. And then it's also, tends to be really, really well written, really interesting. The characters have a lot of really fun personalities. So, for example, the older brother is a monk class, and tends to have a very stoic or kind of Buddhist outlook on things, that sort of thing. So his commentary tends to reflect that, whereas the youngest daughter tends to be very kind of naive and bubbly. So for example, all of the evil corrupted creatures you're fighting are these, kind of creatures made of, pure blackness. And, she reasons that, maybe they're not all evil because the family has a pet cat that's black and it's not evil.
Okay.
So it's just, just kind of adorable, sorts of things.
Well, it gives you opportunities to learn who these characters are, which is neat. I would be remiss. Jala would find me remiss if I didn't call out the similarity between that premise, you're playing as a bunch of generations of a family, similarities between this and Legacy of the Wizard, and very good NES game. It was one of the it's in the same series as Fasanadu. It's one of the few entries in that series that was actually brought over here. But
okay,
yeah, I found my opportunity to put that in so that she did not yell at us for missing that. Yell at me for missing that.
Understandable. So and then I think the last thing I'd say about it is it also does a really good job of having a lot of diversity between the character classes. All of the characters have very different ways they manage their different ways they attack, different ways they, do resource management, in terms of being cooldown based, stamina based, mana based, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then as you level up one character, you basically periodically unlock perks for the other characters. And then similarly, if you play as a single character too long, they'll basically get fatigued and you'll have to play as one of the others. So the end result is you kind of have to play as all of the characters, which is kind of neat.
I was going to ask if they forced any kind of rotation.
Yeah. So far, really good. In terms of the, worlds they directly show you, I've almost completed the second one out of three. However, they've already had at least one scenario where a random event basically forced you into a completely separate world. And so presumably there, you know, could be more, or, you know, later ones maybe could be longer. Mm-hmm. So I'm maybe about 2/3 of the way through, but yeah, we'll have to see.
Hmm. Have you ever played Hyper Light Drifter?
I have not.
Okay. The based on looking at video while we're talking about this, you know, this kind of fast moving top down kind of combat here, that's the closest comparison that I can draw. But I was basically asking just so you, if you had played it, if you could confirm that it's similar to that. But the world may never know.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I'll check that out.
It's really good. It's different than this, but it, you know, the base mechanic looks similar.
Yeah. So one of the things that's kind of interesting about this is one of the big differences between the different character classes is, for example, one of the characters is a archer, and so, you know, has ranged attacks, but you can move as you're shooting. One of the other characters is a mage, has ranged attacks, but you can't move while shooting. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you know, the monk character, basically, if you're not right on top of a enemy when you attack, you'll kind of leap forward and punch them. Mm-hmm. So my point being that the characters vary a lot in terms of exactly how mobility works for them. Mm-hmm. And my understanding from what I've read about Hyper Light Drifter is that it's a, you know, kind of has some of the like Bloodborne-esque things where it's, you know, very dodgy.
Yeah, and just you're doing a lot of dodge roll.
Right. And so what I imagine is it would probably end up being more similar to some characters and less similar to others.
Yeah, no, I imagine there's maybe one class that is kind of explicitly modeled off of that based on the way this looks.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Nice. This is Children of Morta. Mm-hmm. Cool. I don't have any other questions. Ben, do you?
Nope.
Huh. That all you played, David?
So I checked out a little bit the Nemesis system on Warframe. However, I've been going for a while, and so I don't know if we want to go into that or just move on.
I'm going to have us move on.
All right, that makes sense.
Warframe will be there for us.
Yes, yes, it will.
Ben, how about you?
I got this new thing to talk about with Rocket League. I have two things to talk about. Both are a little bit sizable, so we'll see what happens. The first one is I finished Outer Worlds last week. David, how far are you in this game?
Let's see here. So I think I'm on the, when you go back to the first world and it's overrun by raptor monsters, I'm ready to finish that up.
Okay. I don't think I ever went back to the first world. I just just turned off the power and left.
Do you not? So how did you get, you have to get like the docking permit?
For which place?
Sorry, this right is inside after baseball, but... Yeah, so go right ahead. After you leave the first world, like your next mission is you go to like the kind of, you know,
The nav key for the hazardous planet or whatever.
Yep.
I fought / snuck my way through that planet without getting the nav key, for better or for worse.
Okay, so going back to that world is the other way to get the nav key.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's a little bit challenging doing that. That's like the main place where you level up too, because at the beginning that world is like almost impossible to get through. Like I had to sneak at certain parts because I like had no ammo left and like had little attack left. But by the end of the, or towards the end of the game, you're just like dominating the monsters on that world. So it feels like a really good sense of progression. Overall, I'm pretty like lukewarm on this game though. I think the last time I talked about it was 2 weeks ago, and I was at the point where they tell you it's the point of no return. And I wasn't sure if the game was halfway over or 90% over. It turned out to be 90% over.
Okay.
And so that kind of speaks to like my problem with the game, whereas it just kind of ends with like a wet fart, where it's just like, I wish they went into more. It seemed like there was more story to be explored, and it just kind of ended.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about the development of the game now, if like this was the entire vision of it or not. Without spoiling what happens in the end, they do the Fallout like thing where they show like a slideshow of what happens with different aspects of the game. And I was just like really underwhelmed by that. Like, it's just like they already did this like 15 years ago with Fallout 3. I don't think that's like a good way to end a game, or I don't think it's a satisfying way to end a game. So I wish that they would do something besides that. At least with like, it also feels like things like Fallout New Vegas had more flexibility with what the ending was than this was. It seems like this, like all the way through, you're just kind of restricted to binary decisions where it's like the one that me and David are talking about on that planet. You can either side with one faction or the other, and that's it.
Yeah.
And like every other planet feels like it's the same sort of decision. So that was a little bit dissatisfying. The characters are probably the strongest part of the game. But even within that, I don't know. The worlds that they have, the content there is good. It's just I wish there was more, I guess.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a full game to me.
So I think, obviously, I haven't seen as much as you have, but I think probably my take on it so far is pretty similar. You know, probably the biggest difference would be, you know, I really like the characters. You know, I think they're, you know, maybe some of my favorite characters of any game I've played. But I definitely agree with you. I feel like if you want to compare it to, you know, New Vegas, which I think is in some ways fair, in some ways not. I feel like it loses a lot from not being open world. In that, you know, that makes it much more on rails.
I don't think that's like a down for me, because like I really like games like Knights of the Republic where you're just moving from like set to set, you know. I didn't mind that aspect, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and then I think the other thing I agree with you is, yeah, I felt like they didn't go, at least so far, you know, haven't gone in depth enough with the storyline. And then also, so at least to me, you know, kind of the commentary it has or whatever on kind of this weird, you know, hyper corporatist culture, I felt like they didn't do enough to really explore it one way or the other. You know, they don't do enough to show, you know, like why anyone would think that was okay, or, you know, how characters adapted. I think maybe some of it also is, it almost seems like it's a little too much of a caricature, and then that makes it hard to actually say as interesting things about it.
I was actually, I guess we kind of disagree. We both dislike the game, but I guess for different reasons. Because I was completely fine with it being a satirical take on it, because I think it would be way too depressing if it wasn't. I won't give away what the situation is, but there's one situation where the solution is you kill like three or four people. And then the person you're talking to afterwards is like, man, like lawyers are going to have a hard time with this one, but you did a great job. You know, it's just like, I don't know. It's just like really depressing, really depressing. But it's done in a funny enough way that it's like that. Yeah. If you don't feel terrible about it, I guess.
So it's not so much, I think, that I necessarily disagree with that, because I definitely think you're right. It's more, I'd say, I think it's hard to really explore, you know, kind of capitalism and, you know, make commentaries on that when the version of capitalism you're depicting is just so silly, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that then makes the game a little more shallow than it otherwise might be.
Like, maybe because it's such a caricature of our current capitalist system that they can't have better arguments against what our current system is.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
I could see that. Yeah.
As a sidebar, I've been recently reading Edward Snowden's autobiography, so I feel like I have a good amount of content criticizing our current system.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm not feeling lacking in that area, I guess. So.
Yeah, you're just,
yeah, we're, yeah, we're, no, totally.
Worthwhile target, at the very least.
So I guess rounding out complaints about this game, and I don't want to be completely down on this game, because I do think, like, If you like the Fallout games, this is probably going to be a good game for you. Mm-hmm. It just feels like they didn't do too much beyond what's already been done with, like, Fallout and Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
But the another mild complaint that I have is it feels like you're not too rewarded for all the different skills that you invest in, or it doesn't feel like there's enough rewards for what you get. So, like, there was one thing that was gated for, like, a lockpicking of 100, like, literally one thing, like a weapon, and it's on a side mission. So I've leveled up to get that, but then, like, there were very few other instances where, like, I was rewarded for having a lockpick of 100. So there's, like, stuff like that. You know, there are other skills like that that were equally high. And it feels like, yeah, it feels like that was kind of like a misstep.
I totally agree.
But it's kind of also a product of the game, because it's like they have, what, like 20 or 25 different skills. And so it's kind of hard to hit every one, except for other games have done this pretty well, which I will talk about as my next game. Yeah, surprise, surprise. But which games were you thinking of, Cole?
I was thinking of, like, even just previous Fallout games. You know, like, there were lots of places for you to flex, you know, any of the show me more content skills, you know, luck picking and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
you know, even getting those most of the way there, you know, got you. It was basically a way to, again, see more stuff. Like I said, there's show me more content skills. I'm talking in circles, but, like, they're even just, like, in previous stuff that this team has worked adjacent to or worked on,
they've
managed to, you know, find a way to reward those different investments that you make.
I'm thinking of the Mr. House ending that where you can, like, sneak into his lair or whatever.
Oh yeah
something gated by that.
I will say I totally agree with you. I think that's definitely right. Although I will say, in their defense, they do maybe the best job I've seen of very consistently allowing those kind of more content things specifically in dialogue.
That's good.
Okay. You know, that's the one area where I'd say they use it a lot, although it seems like there's very few instances where it actually dramatically changes the course of what happens. I don't recall anything like you can do in, I forget, was it 3, where you could basically persuade the final enemy to just, like, give up effectively? Sorry, go on.
Yeah. No. I'm trying to think of, like, final thoughts about the game for me. I don't know. I don't think they really stuck the landing with the game, so that kind of left a sour taste in my mouth about the end of it. But I don't know. Maybe they'll make DLC for the game, or maybe they'll make a sequel that has more content. I think I would still get another game by them for sure.
It would take more than one stinker to make Obsidian, you know, worth paying attention to.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just glad, because they've kind of been making games recently that have been games that, you know, I probably still like the Obsidian DNA, but I'm not particularly interested in the specific setting they're making. And so I'm glad they're at least made a game that, like, I'm interested in, you know, what they're overall doing. But yeah.
Yeah, so for as much criticism as I'm lobbing its way this week, I will say that there's enough good stuff in it that I've probably praised in previous weeks, that if a sequel came out today, I would still get it and play through it, I think. And also, Sam was one of my companions, the cleaning robot. And I thought it was great all the way through, because for as much development as they give all the other characters, they do nothing with Sam. Sam is a robot that wants to clean. He does not change at all. There are no loyalty quests for him.
You don't like buy him a personality chip and he immediately gets depression?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
No, that's your ship's robot.
So I was very happy that they had that sort of contrast in there as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, I want to kind of move on and talk about the next game that I've been playing.
Okie doke.
This is a game that I think does a really good job of rewarding you for whatever you invest in. This is a game that came out recently that a lot of people have been talking about. It's called Disco Elysium.
Ah, shit. Oh, yeah, nice. I got that on sale. Fuck. Yeah, I've heard Disco Elysium brought up specifically in kind of like contrast or counterpoint to The Outer Worlds. Tell me about Disco Elysium, because I want to play this.
It is a game that's like off the wall. It's very hard to, it's a very bizarre storyline. You wake up in a body that might not be yours. Ooh. It might be a corpse, but a functioning corpse with rigor mortis. You know, I don't know entirely. and it's also in like the 1950s, maybe 60s or 70s. I mm-hmm. think it's the 50s, but I can't recall. Anyway, and you're this detective.
Can your character.
Yeah. You're this police detective. You wake up. After going on in like a multiple day alcohol bender, you don't know if you did it or not. You don't have any memories of it. And then you're kind of thrown into solving a murder case. The cool thing about this is the game opens with a dialogue between two parts of your brain talking to you. Hmm. It's like the limbic system and whatever the equivalent of the id is. I forget what it's called in the game. Mm-hmm. And the place where you put upgrades in the game are different parts of your brain, more or less. So there's like you can invest points in the logical part of your brain. And this could be like encyclopedic knowledge, like logical knowledge. Mm-hmm. I forget some other examples. You can invest in like the emotional intelligence of your brain. So like how well you can tell the motivations of other people's or how well you can read people. And within each of these categories, I think there's like maybe six or seven different like attributes specifically. Then there's also like the not really your brain, but like basically like your physical endurance. Mm-hmm. It's like how much pain you can tolerate. Basically what it comes down to is you have a health meter, and if it drops to zero, you suffer a heart attack.
Cool.
And so if your endurance is at the lowest scale, then you have a hit point of a one. So if any bad thing happens to you, you have a heart attack and die.
Yeah.
The way they kind of mitigate this is there's checkpointing. It's basically like every 10 or 15 minutes in the game, you'll hit a checkpoint. Uh-huh. So if you survive that long, then you can kind of load and save from there if you want. Otherwise, you can't really save scum or anything like that, which is good. Mm-hmm. But basically this and then the last system is they call it a weird word, and I don't know what it's like, motorix or something like that. And it's similar to like physical endurance, but it's slightly different. That's the one that I'm like least clear on how it affects the game, because so far I've done three different playthroughs of the first like hour of the game or so to try and see what strategy works best. And it's really cool. So at the beginning of the game, you build your character. So you pick which ones you want to invest in most. I think you have eight points to spend over the four. And so they all start at one. So you could do everything like 4, 4, 4. Or no, is that right? You could do everything, I think, three across the board, because mm-hmm. you could do +2 for four stats.
Yeah.
But what I've done in the three playthroughs that I've done is put one attribute at 6 and then the other three at 2 to try and see like what specifically you get if you go really hard into one thing. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty impressive how they do it so far, at least in the first hour. I'll give you one example. You're talking to a clerk and he mentions like the size of the hole in the fence in the backyard. If your intelligence is set max, you understand the reference that he made. He made a historical reference to a certain cavalry. Mm-hmm. If your emotional is set to max, however, instead, you say, oh, he said this to be mean to you. You understand like his motivations about it. So it's like two different things that you're unlocking, even though it's like the same conversation, depending upon how your skills are checked.
Fucking rules. I love that so much.
Yeah, and there's like check upon check upon check in this game, and so they have different types. They have like white checks, things that you can retry over and over again, which I'm not really sure why they're there. I think they gate it where it's like you try it once and then you're locked out until you invest more points in the skill, then you could try it again if you want. Mm-hmm. And then they have like red checks where it's like you try it once, you can never try it again after that.
Yeah.
And, and it's basically a die roll, and it's the what you're rolling against has to the difficulty is compared to wherever your skill's at, and then there's like a die roll on top of that. And they tell you what the probability of passing is. They don't go through the details of like what the die roll is and how they calculate it.
Yeah,
exactly. So that part I'm still not clear on. But they tell you like what your current stat is and what you're rolling against, more or less. Anyway, so far it's been really interesting to see how that stuff changes. If I maxed out my physical endurance, I was able to get in a fight with someone who is like giant, and I was able to beat him up, which was like really cool. So it's really cool to see how, depending upon how you class your person, you can go at similar situations in completely different ways and try and work things out.
You yell at me if I'm getting too far ahead, but like the thing that, you know, when somebody was trying to sell me on this, what they talked about was that pumping a lot of points into something actually has like downsides to it as well, that like it can eventually like wrap around on you. Where like, oh, because you are so good at this, you actually like this confers another kind of behavior on you that's like not necessarily as beneficial to you in different places.
This actually sounds like the what is it, flaw system in Outer Worlds. I haven't, because they have that in the Outer Worlds where it's like if you jump too much from high areas, you break your legs a bunch. It'll say, oh, you're weak bone, so now you suffer this much damage if you fall, but then you gain a perk. So like they try and off, and you have the option of taking that deal if you want. I haven't seen a system like that in here yet, but admittedly I've only played like the first hour like three different times. So it could be something that they add in the game later, but I just haven't seen yet. The style of the game is, it's like a, was not orthogonal, but what is it,
where asymmetric. It's
like, yeah, that's the one.
It's funny because orthogonal is oftentimes more accurate. Or orthogonal projection, but isometric is the commonly used term.
Yeah, so it's isometric style, but despite that, it feels very fluid. Like a lot of the stages like have a lot of like height change to them, so it doesn't feel like your typical like, I don't know, dungeon crawler type isometric game. They instead have like fewer sets but kind of more depth to them, or more complexity to them.
I mean, it's like an isometric, like, interactive fiction game.
So that's been a lot of fun. I guess I'm making slow progress through it though, since I'm trying to explore, like, basically what I'm trying to do is figure out what the best build is, the build that I like the most, and then try and play through the game on that. So I think that's kind of what I'm going for. Yeah, I think I'll probably try and side with like high int and low everything else, because that's usually what I like to play as. Yeah. But we'll see if that works.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's like somebody looked at how a low intelligence run of Fallout 2 works out sometimes, and said, "Let's like make a game like of that, but for everything."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this sounds fucking badass to me, man. I'm ready to read some shit.
It seems like this would also be an excellent game to stream as well. It's like the only point of frustration is like you probably die a lot, because there's plenty of checks where it's like, oh, let me see if I can do this, and then the result is, oh, I lost a health and died. Oh well. there's actually two points. There's your health, like your physical endurance. There's also like your mental endurance, which. I guess maybe that was the fourth stat that I hadn't gone over. So it's basically like your mental constitution. I think the farthest I've gotten in the game is on my high physical endurance run through. but instead of that, with that one, I only had one like health bar for my mental constitution. And so as soon as somebody said something negative to me, you go to this dialogue scene where it's like, you have doubts about it and you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to quit the force. And the game ends. That's it. Like, yay. You have to start over from the previous checkpoint.
You're too fragile.
And so it's like, it's just as hard to do it that way as if you have a low physical endurance as well. So it's like something you have to balance in the calculation. So, they have four pre-made classes that they offer you at the beginning. I don't think any of them have any ones for the attributes. They might have like one or two twos though. So those might be like good places to start, but I'm probably going to reject those for a little bit.
It sounds like you're playing it the way they wanted you to.
Yeah, which is the way that I want to, right? So, yeah, so far I enjoyed it a lot. It's too easy to too early to say if this is like a great game or not, since I've only played the hour, but the hour I played, I think, is the basis for what could be a really good game.
Yeah,
depending upon where it goes with it. Also, like, there's a path in this where you can just go fucking crazy. Like, you can just pick, like, I'm gonna get lost in insanity if I want to, and like, you can just pick that route if you want, which is interesting. I'm trying the role play of, let me try and like figure everything out on the fly and pretend like I know what I'm doing, even though I have no idea why I'm here. So that's what I'm going with.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really happy that one of us played it before the year went out.
Yeah. 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 Cause it's gotten like really good reviews. Mm-hmm. I even, overheard a bar conversation, I think 2 weeks ago, where someone's like, man, you should stop playing The Outer Worlds tonight. You should go back home and buy Disco Elysium. Very weird to overhear. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I don't know that I have any other questions about it. I just, you've, you know, further made this sound like the game for me.
Yeah, yep. I'd be very interested in hearing what you have to think about it. So, play that game that you own. Yeah. So cool. What have you been playing, if not that?
If not that, then this. As I mentioned before, I've been kind of head down on assignment play. However, I can't speak too much about it because it is primarily a story-based game, but I am having a lot of fun's the wrong word, but I have a huge amount of admiration for a game that I'm streaming right now called Lorelei.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. So this is the third game. That's complicated, but let's say the third game in a trilogy that also includes The Cat Lady, which is...
Okay.
Yes. A horror adventure. It is a horror adventure game where a lot of very bad stuff happens. It's very similar to The Cat Lady, very similar to Downfall in that regard. all of them are kind of tied together by kind of a main, for lack of a better word, antagonist, kind of a devil figure that will bring you back to life in exchange for, doing horrible things, in real life.
Is that the cat lady?
No, the cat lady, she's brought back to life. The devil-like figure is called the Queen of Maggots. I didn't want to say it because it sounds dumb if you're not playing the game and seeing how it's presented. So Lorelei, you're playing as a young woman over in Britain, and she comes from a terribly broken home. She comes back from her first day on the job at a new job to her depressed mom and alcoholic dad, and things go very, very wrong for her and her little half sister. And it only gets worse from there, let's say. Again, I can't talk too much in specifics because I don't want to spoil this. I did a Hex Crank first hour about this earlier in the year, and obviously I'm streaming it right now. But something, two things stand out to me just as I think about this and play it, and it could be recency bias, but it might be my game of the year, is that this particular developer, it's a small studio that is primarily headed up by one guy over in Poland. They deal with incredibly serious themes. Mm-hmm. The Cat Lady is almost entirely about depression and suicide, mental illness generally, and terminal illness. That's big, real stuff. When I was on stream, I forget who it was who said this, but it's like, oh, this game is only categorized as horror because tragedy games don't exist. And it's a harrowing experience, and there's supernatural elements to it, but that is almost always there to present fantastic or allegorical imagery on top of these actual real life problems, and everything is so well observed, and everything is kind of handled with what, to me, as somebody who has, dealt with certain numbers of these things, with a good amount of respect that feels very lived in, very observed, and very, very, very seen. So, you know, early on in this game, you know, this isn't too much of a spoiler, but it puts a locked door between you and a loved one who is at the depths of depression. And it is as horrifying as that sounds, and captures that feeling, which, you know, is maybe not something everybody wants to sign up for. But it is played for a very, you know, it is played very effectively for horror and pathos and does not feel exploitative at all in a way that kind of thing could.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. You don't press F at any point to pay your respects through the door.
To pay respects. No, you try and get that door down, you know, and it only gets more devastating from there. You know, there are whole chapters that just, man, you're making choices in them and you are just facing incredibly grim circumstances, again, in a way that doesn't feel like, you know, and 30 Rock, where Tracy Morgan stars in that movie called Hard to Watch, that is just Oscar baby because it's the most depressing thing possible. There are moments of levity and, you know, there are moments of empowerment that are presented here. But it is all very well observed. And like, if this is a game that will make you feel something in a way that is, I feel, is pretty much guaranteed. And that's something that I value, you know, especially in games that have a fictional element. It feels like it is dealing with themes that are not addressed elsewhere, and it is dealing with them well here. The other thing, kind of in addition to how well observed it is that it's beautiful. Like if you look up, if you look up screenshots of this, LoreLai, is the way that the title of it is spelled. the art style has definitely evolved, between Cat Lady, Downfall, and this, and gotten more elaborate. But like, it has not rejected the monochrome design ethic of it. It has kept things relatively monochrome and in relatively kind of constricted color palettes, but the few colors that they use in a palette for any given scene are fucking vibrant and gorgeous. And there are some stills in this that it's like, oh yeah, that would be a good desktop backdrop, and the only reason that you don't do it is because there's another one right after that. This is a fucking gorgeous game that does a very good job of kind of integrating hand-drawn stuff with both kind of really basic 3D and lots and lots of filter and light work. It is just ridiculously gorgeous, especially in motion.
Yeah, it is impressive that it all does look hand-drawn.
Voice acting is uniformly extremely good. All of the performances are again well observed, is the way that I would put it, and you know, the writing is really spot on. It is not oppressively depressing. I mean, it is, but there are moments of genuine levity to it. Yeah, I have a huge amount of admiration for it. Now, I haven't beaten it. I am two chapters away from the end. I'll be finishing it this Friday night. Unless it, you know, takes a real shit in the back half, like, I would really say that this is, you know, any of these, any of the Harvester games, Cat Lady and this more so than Downfall, but like this fits in really well with those, and they are special and not like things, not like a lot of other things that I've seen at this kind of level of production.
So would you say, does the game have a message, or is it predominantly just like presenting experience?
It has a message. Like, it is definitely pushing something forward about Lorelai's situation and the people around her. You know, it is very allegorical in terms of, you know, again, it's got these supernatural elements that are obvious stand-ins for particular forces that, you know, might be acting on an individual life. There's a good amount of expression for how you react to particular things. Like, you can be sympathetic to your family, or you can, you know, kind of bring the heat to them. Like, your reaction, you know, your own values can be expressed through Lorelai, and all of them feel pretty genuine. But kind of broadly, they are trying to say something about all of these, but, you know, it's hard to sum all those up without spoiling spoiling specifically what happens in The Cat Lady. But
sure.
Yeah. It's so good.
Are you streaming it again this Friday?
Yeah, I'm going to be streaming the very last part of it this coming Friday.
Sweet.
Yeah, I have cried on the stream. like there are particular things that are like specific triggers for me, you know, in this. And it's like, okay, the second they walk into this world, I'm okay. I've got a mute button. It's fine. But am I going to? Is this going to feel shitty? Like no. Like but it feels like they know this. It feels like they know what they're talking about. And so that's rare, you know. So yeah. And there's one specific chapter that it hinges on you making a series of choices or being tempted into making a series of choices that is more devastating and more heinous than any of the evil options that I have seen in like 95% of games. Yeah. No, that's a lot of vagueness. I understand. It's a story-based, you know, it's a story-based adventure game. It'd be kind of like talking about the particulars in, you know, like Heavy Rain or something, right? That's a shitty comparison, but anything that's cinematic, it's going to hinge mostly on the story. There are simple puzzles to solve, but it is more about, like, putting themes together than anything else. Yeah. Lorelei. It's good, guys.
Tragedy simulator.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm super excited because we're doing Cat Lady for Watch Out for Fireballs, and I really want to go back to that.
Yeah, I was looking at the release dates. Cat Lady was 2012, and I guess Downfall was 2016. It looked like maybe.
Yeah, so Downfall was technically first. He did Cat Lady, and then he remade Downfall with elements of Cat Lady in it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, okay. Cool.
So the chronology is a little bit weird, but as it stands right now, it goes Cat Lady, Downfall, and then this.
Okay.
Any other questions about Lorelei?
No.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer. I posted this one, and I'm sorry that I posted it kind of late, later than we usually do, but it's apropos because it provided inspiration. So speaking of late, what game or series did you arrive to later than everyone else? And do you feel like that helped you appreciate it more or less? And I'm going to get us started here with Jonathan, who writes, played the last game released on the Monster Hunter series. I think I got the most accessible game for a new player. Great game. Monster Hunter World, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of people tried to make me think that it was the most accessible one. Maybe it was. I still bounced off of it.
Did you try playing it?
Yeah.
I feel like it's a blind spot on our podcast.
David played a ton of it.
Yeah, David played the shit out of it.
Oh, well, all right. Never mind.
Yeah. No, Monster Hunter, I think, specifically is one of those ones that, you know, it forbids new entries.
To be fair, that I feel like Monster Hunter is fairly within the niche of, you know, where my taste in games and yours just doesn't overlap in terms of being like a game that's in some ways all about grinding.
Yeah. But that's fine.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just saying. So like, yeah, I feel like that we talk about games being made for you. I feel like sometimes there's games that's like, that's just not my thing. But I think it's a good game.
Nice. No, I believe that it's a good game. It didn't stick for me. Yeah. David, what does Gerald say?
Gerald says, got into Dark Souls after 3 was released. Bloodborne and the 3 Souls games quickly grew to my favorites over all others. It's both good and bad, though. Good being I got a lot of tips and help understanding the games, which is a big part of it. The bad, the games were a bit dead at the time. That mainly goes for Bloodborne.
Yeah, no, it would have. I think every year now they do a return to blank event in a lot of those. There just recently was a return to Yharnam event where like everybody said, hey, let's play Bloodborne all at one time and, you know, blow the roof off this.
Yeah, see, it's weird for me because I played Bloodborne right when it was released for PlayStation Plus.
Oh, so you had a bunch of people.
Yeah, that was it was one of those things where I would literally have almost continuous, like, the ghost people you'll see running by or, you know, any trap in the game would not just be marked, but would be marked, like, five times.
Yep. That seems like a good way to play it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it was good. It made getting through some of the chalice dungeons a lot easier.
I'm sure. Yeah. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I tend to get a console a generation behind. Right now I'm working through the back catalog of PS3 exclusives. And whether it's a series, Uncharted, or a standalone title, The Last of Us, soon to be a series. Mm-hmm. The work by Naughty Dog on that system is exceptional. I never played any of them until a few months ago, and it's been an absolute pleasure to catch up. Just finished The Last of Us on Sunday, and that ending, wow. Yep.
So first off, I want to apologize if I offended you last week, Ollie. At least you're still around, so thanks. and I'd be
wait,
curious.
Wait, what'd you do?
I said something about how it was possible to be too Irish in reference to BioShock, where the character Atlas was immediately suspicious because he was too Irish. Yeah. And it was a whole thing. It wasn't. I mean, I don't imagine anybody took actual offense to it. But I don't mean to minimize you if you do. Oh, God, I'm in a woke cycle.
Let's not offend the Irish a second week in a row.
No, let's not do it. But I'd be curious. It'd probably be a little bit easier for Uncharted, but like for The Last of Us, if you had to actively avoid spoilers on that or if it just never became a factor.
Also, I'm impressed that you played. It sounds like you played through the entire Uncharted series because I feel like the first one does not really give you a lot of encouragement to continue on in the series.
First one is a rough putt.
Yeah.
Although maybe second, like maybe they like stealthily fixed some of the stuff with that when they put out like the Nathan Drake collection. Maybe
they like retconned it. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I remember that one having the best hand-to-hand combat, though.
I don't remember specifics.
I don't know. I think it wasn't until the third one where they kind of like made the combat more dynamic, where you can just like shove people into anything you're next to or use objects you're next to like hit people with.
The third one was like, oh, the Arkham series has figured this out, so why don't we just do that?
Well, and like literally like the first fight is like a bar fight or whatever. They just litter the entire room with objects you can use for the fight. Mm-hmm. They're like so proud of the engine that they created.
Show it off. Yeah, man. Build a showpiece. Let's see here. Casey writes, I first played XCOM Enemy Unknown in 2016, just after XCOM 2 released. Oh, God, that was so long ago. I loved the look and story from watching streamers play it while they were waiting for XCOM 2. And because I couldn't afford a $60 game, I picked up XCOM instead. I've since played it multiple times, including with the Long War mod, which turns it into a whole new game. And that has consumed countless more hours. As to how it helped me appreciate the series, I honestly don't think I would have stuck with the series based on just what came out with XCOM back in 2012. And if I had played it then, I probably wouldn't have gone back and tried all the mods when I did. Yeah, you stepped into a real mature kind of ecosystem with that. Mm-hmm. So that definitely benefited you.
So two thoughts. One, I really want them to make a remake of XCOM from the Deep.
Oh, yeah.
And two, I feel like XCOM would be a really good game for a Soulsborne style asymmetric multiplayer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just some way for like people to randomly, you know, help or hurt your missions and, you know, geosphere shenanigans.
Yeah, do something like World Tendency from Demon's Souls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, Castlevania...
Symphony of the Night?
Soliloquy of the Night?
Symphony of the Night, sorry. I didn't mean to stick you with the acronym, I apologize.
No problem. So, Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, because of Watch Out for Fireballs, I started it as soon as I heard the episode, and I've been playing once a year since then. And because of Symphony of the Night, I got into the Bloodstained games, especially Ritual of the Night.
I forget, is Ritual of the Night the full one, or is that the NES kind of the NES one?
I didn't realize Bloodstained was a series.
They put out, so as part of the Kickstarter, they put out one that was like, so if Bloodstained is the modern Metroidvania, like they put out basically what is like the prequel with NES style. Yeah, so I forget what it is. It's Something of the Moon. So yeah, Ritual of the Night is the full game, and then it was Something of the Moon is the one that I got on Switch. That is fun, but very difficult, and I didn't play enough of it to say anything meaningful about it.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I think that it does qualify as a series just because there's more than one. But yeah, getting into like even just Metroidvanias in general, if that was your first one, Lindsay. You're spoiled for choice. Man.
Hollow Knight.
Yeah, Hollow Knight. Or even just get yourself those three the three Castlevania games for the DS. You know. God, we need to do Order of Ecclesia on WoW. I really like that game, and I want to play it again. Anyway, Ben, what does Marisan say?
Marisan says, I feel like everyone talks about A Link to the Past, but my first Zelda game was Link's Awakening DX on my Game Boy Color. And oh my goodness, is that a great game.
My first Zelda game was Link to the Past as well. Not DX, but yeah, I played that one before all the others.
Mine was the N64 one.
Oh, yeah. Ocarina.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good place to come in. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you could hear Greta like take off across the. Did you hear her claws scrabbling like that?
I did not.
No.
You'll have to show me what the wavelength of it looks like on the recording.
Ben apologized in Slack for a chomp because early on in the show, Ben usually is eating dinner and is muting it. And he said, "Oh, here's a chomp," and I was like, "Oh, do you want to see what that looks like on the waveform?" I sent him a screenshot.
The tiniest of blips.
the noise filter got you, buddy. Let's see here. I will pick up with Jaden, who says, I didn't end up playing Myst until this year after seeing an interview with Rand Miller, one of the designers of Myst. It gave me a massive appreciation for the immersive world building and the massive attention to detail in a game as old as I am. I'm playing Riven and Abduction simultaneously right now to try and scratch the itch that it gave me. Two good games.
Yep.
Yeah. Riven specifically is the one that I played and beaten a few times.
I played Abduction and beaten it, so I can speak to that.
Yeah. plenty of those. Yeah, I get the big benefit to coming to something late is like, oh, there's too much, except for the downside, which is what I will talk about when I get to my answers. Let's see, David, what does Warren say?
Warren said, Metal Gear Solid 4 was the first in the series I played. Nothing made sense, especially Jesus. The PS1 sequences.
Wow.
But I became super interested in the characters and wanted to know where they came from. When the HD collection came out, I played through the rest of the games, and Snake Eater is still one of my favorites.
That's a fucking
still
trial.
Still, nothing makes sense. Yeah, he didn't actually say that last part.
But. No. Man, that's a trial by fire. If you could play Metal Gear Solid 4 and still care about anything that happens, if that's your first exposure, man, that's true love. Very good. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I didn't play a Mass Effect game until 3 was out, and I played the first two before the third. I think playing all three games back to back to back helped my enjoyment of the series and allowed it to flow better in my head as far as story gameplay and tactics were concerned, since it was all fresh.
Yeah, remembering the choices that you made is a lot easier when you're not waiting 2 years in between them.
Yeah, and then you get continuity and you don't have your Mass Effect 2 game on a different console than your Mass Effect 3 and feel sad.
Yeah. and then finally here, Steven writes, I've actually gone from disliking Devil May Cry to playing through and enjoying most of the entire series on PS4 over the past year. Before, I never understood the charm of the very doofy and unaware Dante with his wacky woohoo pizza-loving adventures. I never clicked with the twitchy free-flow combat, and now I'm attempting to S-rank the entirety of 4 and 5 simultaneously, and felt all of the hype when, blank when spoilers of the Alpha and Omega appeared near the end of 5. I even understand a lot of the dislike the original release of the reboot garnered at the time in retrospect, as much fun as it can be in its own way. It definitely serves to give things a try, and maybe put you off at first. Metal Gear Solid, Dark Souls, and Devil May Cry were all things I initially gave up on and then jumped back into later in the series.
I'm interested, was Devil May Cry 2 part of any of the anthologies or anything, or has that just been kind of, sent to the cornfields?
I feel like it has to have been updated somehow, put out. I'm not sure on PS4 or anything like that. I think it would be really conspicuous if they didn't.
It was just such a bad game.
Yeah. Yep. But, people defend it because everybody defends everything on the internet. Yeah. It's almost like everybody's on here. So for me, this is one where it's made it more difficult. When we recovered Yakuza a couple years ago on Watch Out for Fireballs, I really found myself digging it. Like, oh my God, it's in a lot of ways, it's really kind of catered to me. Like, it is a fun, kind of like medium depth beat 'em up with a cool cinematic, organized crime story. Like, yeah, like I'm down for all those things. The characters are likable. Cool. Good. Too bad by the time I played that, there were like 15 of them out. That's a little bit of a hyperbole. I think there were like 5, 6, something like that. And I want to play it. Like, I want to do a full run of the series, but just, circumstances, it's a lot. So I'm a little bit discouraged to even get started because there's so much, even though I know I'm going to love it based on having played Yakuza 1,
I feel like now they all have nonsense names. It's like Yakuza Kawaii or whatever.
I mean, Yakuza Kawaii would be interesting. just super deformed chibi Yakuza. No, Yakuza Kiwami is like, that's the name for the updates to 1 and 2, specifically because, those were the ones that were released on the PS2, and so it's harder to get them on, modern systems.
Okay, that makes sense.
So it's like 1 and 2 done in the Yakuza 0 and Yakuza 6 engine, respectively. So, yeah, it's just a lot. So I know that there's plenty there, but it's a little bit intimidating to begin to approach. So, yeah. David, how about you?
So I feel like mine would probably be Metal Gear Solid 5.
Okay.
That being my first experience with Metal Gear Solid. I feel like in some ways that's sort of unfortunate, just because although I really enjoyed it a great deal, or a lot of it a great deal, and would say sort of became a fan, it kind of the degree to which it kind of ends on a bummer just all the way around has really sapped most of my motivation for ever trying any of the other games in this series, just knowing that ultimately the series doesn't go anywhere because 5 basically isn't finished and Konami is never making another one.
And it doesn't dissuade, you're not dissuaded from that kind of point of view, because let me think here, because 5 isn't the chronological end of the series. Like, it's a, it leads into 1. Or it leads into the original Metal Gear.
I don't know. None of the chronology makes any sense to me.
Yeah.
So my understanding was that it was fairly, fairly significant to where the series as a whole was going. Would you say that's not accurate?
I mean, it leads into what the first two Metal Gear games are about.
Okay.
You know, so
It's like a prequel.
Yeah.
But any game you go to is going to be kind of like a regressive mechanically. Maybe outside of like 4 is probably not as hard of a transition. But
yeah, the only Metal Gear Solid game that I would say is like satisfying in your hands. Like the only other one is Metal Gear Rising.
Yeah, and that would be the other thing that'd be a little bit tough, just because like I have such a bias towards like open world games, and you know that's the only one that is that. Although you know at some point I'm still gonna have to pick up some of the previous ones in the series and kind of see what's what.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you'll like them.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I think my answer is probably a cop-out answer like last week, but I'm going to say The Witcher 3. It's a game I arrived late in the series, but I think I arrived there the same time as everybody else.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that counts as an answer or not, but I'm going with it.
No, it didn't hurt you that you arrived late, and in fact, you probably didn't bounce off of it like you would have in the earlier entries in the series that were probably a little bit more clunky.
Yeah, and I have no interest in playing 1 or 2.
Right.
To be clear, I think the lore is great, but I'm not going to do that because I don't want to play like a clunky game.
Yeah,
so.
It's not your kind of game.
What?
Yeah.
Isn't kind of, again, granted, this is the internet, so everyone, you know, defends everything, but isn't kind of the overall consensus that 1 was an overtly bad game?
No. I think that like the 1 definitely has its defenders, but like I don't think it's so much overtly bad as it is just a different kind of thing. Like 1 has a little bit more in common with like Neverwinter Nights or KOTOR than what the series ultimately came even kind of into, you know, where it is, you know, an open world action RPG, you know.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't expect that kind of response to that question that I put up so late, but thank you everybody for throwing in. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer in the future, just hang around the Level Facebook page. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Those go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. David, since you posted this story last week, originally, I'll throw to you first. Tell me about Cyberpunk.
Yeah, so there's a really neat story in the dev blog for NeoCab, which is a recent Cyberpunk game that's told you play as a future Uber driver.
You're like the last human Uber driver in a world of automated ones, right?
Right, exactly. And so the gameplay, the storyline is entirely in the form of you talking to your customers. So in that respect, it's kind of similar to like Valhalla, and you know, there's been a couple of games have kind of done that sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of like almost like a visual novel kind of deal.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But this article is specifically about the efforts to translate it. And in particular, it's about the fact that one of the characters in the game is non-gender binary. And in the game, your character uses basically the singular they to refer to them. And the problem was when it came time to translate it, they apparently the developers, you know, kind of gave the script to the Italian translator and were like, oh yeah, just use whatever the Italian equivalent is. The problem is Italian, like, apparently just straight up does not have any way to do a non-gendered singular pronoun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this article goes through it that all of the apparently, whereas like English is semi-standardized around the singular they.
Only chuds argue against the singular they.
Right.
Yeah.
Italian is still kind of experimenting with, for example, some of the things where, like, you use an X in the place of the letter that indicates it, or, like, an asterisk, or things like that.
Yeah, yeah. We see that over here when people refer to populations or individuals as Latinx.
Right, exactly.
As opposed to Latino or Latina, because either of those can be exclusive or exclusionary. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, and basically the argument they make is kind of the problem with that is, well, obviously, like, the asterisk you can't really use in speech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the X doesn't, you know, just doesn't really come across as, like, a real organic way people would actually talk.
It exoticizes the idea a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so they're, you know, were going through and trying to figure out how they were going to approach it. And what they ultimately decided on was to just kind of make up a gender neutral version and try to set it up and select it in a way that it would be plausible that that might have been a way that, you know, Italian evolved by the time they got to the future. Mm-hmm. So the solution they did, and I'm super sorry because I both cannot speak Italian and do not really understand the, like, linguistic, you know, phonetic stuff they're doing. So I can't really pronounce it, but apparently they use what's called a schwa, which I think Cole looked up when we were talking about before the episode came, which is, I guess, an unstressed
unstressed vowel.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So like the so it's an so it is a rolled over e, and you know, and instead of saying like bellissimo or bellissima, it's almost like an unemphasis of bellissima.
Right.
Would be the way that it comes across, which is kind of halfway in between the two of those, but still, but still distinctive enough when written out.
Right. Exactly. And they also mentioned that apparently, I guess, again, I'm not super familiar with Latin, but apparently some of the like sub languages of Latin, like was it Nepalese or something like that?
Yeah, and like any different flavors of like Romance languages are heavily gendered. Similarly with I believe Japanese as well. A lot of specifically Asian languages end up having this problem.
And so what they're saying is some of the like sub variants of Italian have the schwa sound, but Italian doesn't. And usually the way like a native or just like, I don't know, vanilla Italian speaker would pronounce it would often be just to like not pronounce the schwa. And I guess that sounds approximately the same. Which also seems, you know, sort of appropriate in that then you're just emitting the gendered like sound. So just in general, it's just kind of an interesting article, both talking about the difficulties of you know, translation, and then specifically, you know, how they approached dealing with this problem of, you know, kind of ungendering the language. So yeah, it's really pretty neat.
So solving them, attempting to solve a millennial problem.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really neat article, and it, you know, just, it's great. It's great to see a studio like a learning like, oh, we have no idea of what the concept of this problem is, like we don't even know like to ask the right questions about it, and then working with their translation team to address it. Yeah
definitely.
Cool. I've got one. It's going to be real short. I had no idea that this was even going to be a thing, but there is going to be a Twin Peaks VR game called Twin Peaks VR. It's weird that I'm just learning about this now because it's coming out in December of 2019. I think initially for the Rift HTC Vive and the Valve Index, but it is eventually coming to the Oculus Quest and PlayStation VR, which is likely where I will play it. It involves stuff from season 3, Twin Peaks: The Return. So, even the trailer itself would probably lack context for you if you just watched it. I'm halfway excited about this because I don't know, it's time in that world. I'm a little bit bummed out because the production value looks like total butt. if you look at it, like the hand tracking looks really jittery, but moreover, it's kind of got the fidelity of a PS2 game. A little bit. Let's just say it's like simultaneously, oh, that could be a good idea, and that's what they decided to make it look like. So
does David Lynch have anything to do with this?
I have no idea.
All right.
That is a man who needs to make a video game.
I don't know. I think he would have nothing but contempt for video games.
I feel like that's a make or break criteria.
I'm not hearing that as a argument against.
Okay. yeah, so I'm curious about it. When it comes to PSVR, no matter how badly it reviews, I'll probably pick it up because I am a mark. So, and then Ben, how about you?
I just have a tiny one of this is a thing that's coming out. I just found out they're making a Jesus simulator game. It's from the company that brought you Cooking Simulator or Thief Simulator or Car Mechanic.
The publisher of that, not the actual dev. I don't want Thief Simulator being implicated in this.
Associated with this? All right. Yeah.
Not that I particularly am offended myself, but just it just kind of seems like why you doing that?
This is definitely a gimmick the game, but yeah, a lot of hand healing in first person. I don't know. There's some cute things. It shows them in the trailer. I feel like it'll probably give away most of the comedic bits in the trailer, but like one for instance, it shows you on the cross and it shows your health meter going down. And then it shows at the end of the trailer you rolling a stone away and your health meter going back up.
Okay.
All in first person.
Yeah. That so. Again, I don't know. I am not in the business of being offended for other people. I try not to be anyway. I don't know. It just kind of seems like it would give the wrong people a lot of reason to be really upset that such a thing. I'm dreading the discourse. For most things, I dread the discourse.
So gotcha. I have really enjoyed all of the tweets about this.
Okay.
Comments that collision detection is not working for water. that the bread dupe glitch is totally going to ruin the in-game economy. Stuff like that. So yeah. I've been enjoying those elements of it. I also enjoyed we had a discussion on the games channel of the Slack that the one game that would be, or maybe there'd be others, but a game that would be an amazing Bible game that someone needs to make is a Dynasty Warriors off of the Book of Judges.
where you're just going and just like slicing off a bunch of foreskins, like...
Or you know, fist fighting lions and killing thousands of people with a donkey jaw.
True. I forget. Is the foreskin stuff is that at the tail end of Judges or is that at the first part of Samuel? I forget.
That was I think Samuel because I think that was David.
Yeah, it was King David. Yeah, I forgot if David was involved in Judges.
Yeah, he made his appearance
in the franchise then.
So to a significant degree, Judges was like the Wild West era that David and Saul before him kind of fixed.
It came along and civilized it. And by civilized, I mean cut off a bunch of penis tips.
Yep.
Yep. It was the first fetch quest.
So maybe that'll be DLC for this game.
Oh, man. Who knows? Could be cool. novelty gimmick.
It's like I would not pay more than $5 for this game.
I doubt they would charge more than that. See, it seems like the kind of thing that would show up on scale or on sale quite a bit. Cool. How do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
With Shala not here, we do not have an answer, apparently.
Zippers. The return of zippers.
But buttons. Zippers cannot stand. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level, everybody. I'd like to remind you folks that Duckstream is happening December the 20th through the 22nd, twitch.tv/duckvtv. It's going to be a good time. Other than that, though, you know the usual things to do: Apple Podcasts, ratings and reviews, our Facebook page, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, patreon.com/duckvtv, and coming back next week. It's fun having you. Is there anything I'm forgetting, guys?
Be awesome.
Merry early Christmas.
Yeah. Be safe out there.
We'll get more out of the way.
Yeah. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at twitch.tv/duckvtv.
I've been David Meismith. You can listen to my podcast on The Level.
Cool.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles.
Eat the leg. Not for me.
No. I only have one, and I feel shitty because it's something I said toward the very end. But the first fetch quest.
Not chopping off foreskins.
No, I mean it alludes to that. It's a little bit more tasteful. How about you, David?
I got nothing.
Okay, first test quest no. Is yeah. But it's not that we were stayed. It's just that I think that we were all playing it pretty straight on a lot of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna go to bed. I've had a long day.
All right.